Reichman University.
De-influenced. It's time to set the record straight with Jana Hoffman and Amanda Jakubowicz.
Welcome to De-influenced, a show that explores the world behind the camera, the influencers who can affect our lives and the world in which they live. My name is Jana Hoffman, and today I'm joined by my dear friend and advocate, Amanda Jakubowicz. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you.
We're so happy to have you here today. And before we get started, before we get into everything that we want to talk about, can you tell us a little bit about who you are, you know, what you do for a living, and really how you've been involved in the Jewish online world and Israeli online world in the post-October 7th era that we now live?
When we thought of the idea of this podcast, you and I was like we were saying that we're going to start it by you and I just having sort of an interview conversation. And I was like, well, I feel I'm not like I'm just a girl. I don't, why should I have such big spotlight? But yeah, my name's Amanda. I'm from Canada, but I'm Israeli. I grew up Israeli and I'm in university. And like all Jewish university students, but all Jewish people and even to an extent all people, October 7th was a transformative thing, day, event for our lives. And so basically since the 7th of October, I've been spending all my free time in Israel. So October happened. The semester was just done for, like, even the whole year. Academics, unfortunately, was not something that I can really put my entire full priority into, just because of everything happening on campus and on the ground in Israel. And then so me and my mom were like, we just have to go to Israel. We have to go to Israel. Finally, winter break comes, so we go. And we buy plane tickets to Israel, and we're like, we're just going to find something to do every day. So literally, like, We land a day late because of layovers and canceled flights, and that's a whole other thing. But we forgot about it the second that we land here, and we're just kissing the ground because finally, finally, we're home in a time where we need Israel and Israel needs us. So, yeah, that's kind of like where my efforts to just be here and do whatever I can. And I think it's everyone's obligation to kind of have that spirit when it comes to the 7th is just being here, you know, seeing, understanding, feeling, and actual volunteering. So yeah, every day we were doing something different, like agriculture, picking, I'm like translating.
Like farming and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, like the you know, helping the farmers basically. Barbecues for soldiers, all those types of things, like visiting wounded soldiers. We were with like evacuees' families. And they became all my little babies, all the little kids in my hotel. Like they're literally like my little sisters. I was like teaching them English, like doing dance classes with them. Ugh, love, love.
That's really sweet.
Ugh, I miss them. Anyways, and yeah, that was pretty much how I spent winter break a year ago. And then I have another semester of school, and then summer, I've already spent the past two summers before that in Israel. I'm like, okay, well, why is it different now? Let's go to Israel. The only thing that is different is there's still an obligation to be here and to contribute. So this past summer, I spent my time either staffing one of two birthright trips, like I staffed two birthrights. And then other than that, my free time was spent pretty much at Hostage Square or at like the building beside Hostage Square, the Hostage Families Forum, and doing a bunch of different volunteering there that we can get into. But that's just a little bit about me. Now I'm here now. I just did a Hasbara Fellowships, yes, trip a week ago. And literally last night we finished with that. And now we're here. So that's sort of like, hi, I'm Amanda. But just what I care about really is just Israel. And I think everyone that's a pro-Israel activist that mm-hmm. cares about Israel, you know, really like, it's not only talking the talk, but walking the walk. And so, you know, that's definitely just like a passion of mine, especially in this time, is if you have the means to, if you have the ability to just be here as much as you can, do as much as you can, kind of a general yes.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you mentioned how, you know, we talked about getting this podcast really going over this past summer, and you and I were on the phone almost like every single day at a certain point, just talking like, who do we want to have on this show and why this show exists, and to you, why is it so important for you to like for this show to exist as a whole?
100%. Context for our target audience, hopefully there's a lot of you guys. Me and Jonah are besties, and so like throughout the summer we were having all these conversations and just like going into these like not even rants, but just like diving deep into like all the stuff we see about the pro-Israel community. And like there's so much like unspoken things, like as weird as it is, like we're even using this term now, post October 7th world, like what is that? Like as weird as it is, that exists. There's a sort of like industry that's come of it. And it's just like weird to be like, oh, the post October 7th world. And so we, you know, have been getting into all those types of conversations. And at one point, like, I literally have notes here because I went back before we recorded this. I went back to our conversation of the like millions of voice notes we sent of like, why are we actually here? Like, why am I sitting here right now? And you're sitting here and we have a podcast. So we started talking about the influencers we love, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I write down here, Shachar Cohen, Adiel, Uri, Matan Peretz, Zach Margs. That's the examples I have here because that's what we mentioned in our conversation. So, hey, guys. But, yeah, like, connecting over social media is a helpful thing, and it's helpful for our community. And that's why we have such a big, like, you know, content wave and advocacy wave online. But really, like, there, like I was saying before, there's kind of things that are good about our community. There are things that could be improved. And like at the end of the day, what is a community? It's just a group of individuals that feel some sort of belongingness together.
100%.
So when we talk about pro-Israel community, that's belonging with our love for Israel, our passion for Israel, and not just defending it, but loving it and being proud of it and showing that to the world, and showing and teaching about Israel. And so, yeah, like that pro-Israel community, we want to make sure that we're actually representing ourselves in, you know, the large scale that it is. Like, what's good about it? What's bad about it? And just kind of a meta commentary. And I think us sort of like going through our own little grievances allowed us to kind of be like, okay, let's just have these conversations like
recorded.
Yeah, this is very like, ooh, let's start a podcast. Like, wow, someone should really listen to us talk. So very humble of us. But that's sort of the idea. And then, yeah, I've like literally, this is just notes on our entire conversation, basically. One thing to bring up, though, like, and this is something that I really see, like, with the pro-Israel community, maybe it's just like a grievance I'm putting out, but like sometimes it could be a little repetitive. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that? Like
sometimes you see, like, there's a difference, I think, on your repetitive notes. There's a difference between saying the same message over and over again because it needs to be said over and over again, like using a specific hashtag or using a specific phrase, but then some things just get repetitive, said over and over and over again. You're like, okay, we get the point already.
Right.
Like, and we understand, like, what you're trying to say.
And it's maybe things that become more like, in terms of, let's say, Israel advocacy, right? Like, things that become, oh, let me memorize this talking point, and that's how it becomes a talking point. Because, like, with Israel advocacy specifically, like, what we're saying is true, right? Like, what we're saying is really the fact of what's going on in Israel. But, you know, sometimes, like, in the online sphere, you could have just a little bit too much of the same repetition of those things to the point where, like, it's something to memorize and something to maybe, you know, fight with someone that disagrees with you, like some sort of little talking point, as opposed to, like, a feeling that you have and yet you know about Israel. I hope that makes sense. But I think there's some sort of disconnect there with, like, saying the obvious all the time. And that's how, you know, people in the post-October 7th influencer world, I guess, can get, like, notoriety and recognition is for repeating those things. But I think this podcast is really just a way to have that commentary of, like, well, what actually goes on? Like, why do we have this community? Like, why does it look like this? What are these things that could be repeated?
What are things we could do better?
What is saying the obvious? How do we do that better? And what's good about it?
Yeah.
Like, what do we do good? What do we do bad? Like, let's talk about that. I don't know. I feel like that was so much exposition for just what we're trying to do here.
Especially important given that you know, we talk about, you know, repetitiveness. The influencers who are popular and the influencers who do really well that we also like are the ones who not only they have their series and they have the stuff they do as part of that series, but they also diversify their content to the point of, like, you know that you're going to get a certain type of video with them, but you don't know what they're going to say necessarily, which is a good thing because you're not always going to get the same message repeated and thrown over and over and over at you again, like a lot of the Jewish organizations do, a lot of the Israeli organizations do, a lot of influencers and content creators do as well. They just keep throwing the same message at you
because this
they
is
do
like,
it in a more creative way.
Like, yeah, because just going back to the concept of repetition with, like, within the community and, like, this isn't something exclusive to, like, Israel advocacy or Israel education, but, like, that's important, like, that because if you want also to kind of have, like, a good, strong, passionate pro-Israel, like, community of pro-Israel people, you need those sort of things that are, you know, easily, like, recognizable and just show up and repeat and stuff. I think, like, what we're saying here, we're not criticizing, and, like, I wouldn't judge any prominent figure that's, you know, either advocating for Israel or making content, like whatever they do within kind of like the post October 7th, like context, it's important to have these public figures. And yeah, like at the end of the day, having voices out there that support our community, that's an important thing. And I think the more like nuance that we can have within what does it mean to be pro-Israel, what do we like actually what is the messaging that we actually want, like do these influencers and these public figures, like, is that the representation of the pro-Israel community? And I would say yes, behind all the slogans and stuff, like really, like what do you think, Jonah, our like pro-Israel community, like what do we want to say to the world in a sentence?
I think the problem is that everybody has something that different they want to say to the world.
Exactly.
And that's the problem with the pro-Israel community is that we can't really – we have the same message. We have the same – Israel has the right to exist, and Israel is right in what it does and, you know, whatever we always say. But the problem is there's disagreement about how we say
the
it.
The how. The,
it's
like,
always about
there.
The how. You know, the what we want to say, nobody argues what we're trying to say.
That's
the
literally –
The how, yeah. That's the important part. And – I do want to get into a specific point here because we're talking very general sense. I want to get to a specific.
Yes.
It seems like there's a lot of failures and misunderstandings by not only the non-Jewish and non-Israeli community, but also the like that also goes into the specific like Jewish and Israeli community in a sense of what the post October 7th Hasbara is. Like there's a lot of misunderstandings around it. There's a failure to understand what's really about. And we were talking beforehand about how unless you've really lived here or grew up Israeli, then you don't really fully understand. I kind of want to go into that a little bit if you want to talk about it.
Yeah, like, you know, like, you have advocacy for Israel. You know, like, take the example of, like, the college campuses. And a lot of these advocates, like, maybe haven't been to Israel since the 7th. I think that American, like, North American Jews and Israelis, they speak two different languages, figuratively and literally. And so the Israeli mindset is just something, it's really hard to capture in words, but it's just this sort of like, I don't care and whatever and Israel-centric. Because
mm-hmm.
Israel, I mean, really, like just look at its geographical position. That's like the exemplary thing here. They're very much just like this Western democracy type of culture within the whole Middle East. And so that's like that mindset of like, well, it's just us, like we're Israelis. Nah. And then you have the American Jews that they, you know, they want to communicate that in kind of like the American, like Western democratic little like nice wrap it in a bow way almost. And I just, it's hard when the things that are actually happening that people are advocating for are here on the ground. And you'll have, like, you know, Jews in the diaspora trying to advocate and explain that. But they either themselves, like, maybe haven't been to Israel since October 7th or have been but just don't have, like, a lot of immersion with that Israeli mindset that I was talking about. And so that's when you see a sort of disconnect. And I think that could be a really big basis for why Hasbara is – Hasbara, I said that so Americanly, why it could be failing and not really as good as we want it to be, and how our image is so wrong to what's really going on in the big in the true picture. And I think that disconnect is part of it, because like Israelis kind of communicate things in one way, and American Jews, North American Jews, diaspora Jews, do so in a different way. And then there could be some inconsistency. And then that inconsistency is where the other side can come and criticize us for it.
Do you think one of the things we fail on, and this is very, you know, very popular saying of facts don't care about your feelings, that too often we, and I say we both, this is both Jewish and Israeli advocacy in general, present ourselves very, you know, we're right for presenting the facts and the statistics and everything, but we do so without seemingly a lack of empathy or compassion sometimes. Like, it feels very, we're just spouting facts back at the person without really showing emotion, empathy. Like, say what you want about the other side, they do a lot, almost everything they do and say is wrong, but the one thing they do well is they're very good at garnering emotion and showing emotion for what they support and what they say.
That's one thing. And like, listen, because I am the first loudest person to say that the things going on right now in Israel that are still going on, you know, October 7th, 2023 is just a day that drags on when people are living in ongoing trauma, and hostages are still in Gaza, and just like we're not even close as an Israeli society to post-trauma yet. And so I am the first person to say that that's an issue of humanitarianism and human rights. And it's so hard when the other side, with their great marketing, already took those terms. And so, you know, when they'll say, it's about, you know, equity and human rights and da-da-da, and then we'll say, no, actually, our side is that. It's hard to kind of, like, you know, have a actually, like, win that argument, because they said it first. They took those terms first. Those terms are already linked with, like, that, like, the Palestine anti-Israel movement in North America and, like, in those protests. And so that's something really difficult, because it is so, like, skewed. But additionally, like, I think criticism about the pro-Israel community is that we know our facts. We have our facts sheet. We have the little pamphlet full of the whatever and da-da-da, and it's true. Like,
it's factual information.
Israel isn't an apartheid state, right? Like, but there's no genocide. Like, things like that, right? Like, it's true. However, you have a lot of people in North America that are very passionate about advocating for Israel and defending Israel and have a strong sense of identity. And that's such important things. That's baseline things when it comes to, you know, being part and an active part of the pro-Israel community. But I think there is a lack of just literal, like, knowledge and learning and history that is present on our side. Because a lot of people will just have those talking points of that a lot of times the other side might have heard before. And so you end up with a fight. Because let's equate it to, like, political, like, yelling at each other, right? You have, like, a Republican and a Democrat, like, guy. And then the Republican has all these talking points that you hear all the time on the news or on YouTube and stuff. The Democrat has these ones. And it becomes, like, a script. Mm-hmm. It becomes this one yells at this one. And then they negate that talking point.
You can predict where it's going to go.
Exactly. It's like a script. And so all you're doing is, if someone's filming it and it's, like, you know, dramatic, then you're going to have a clippable moment between a pro-Israel and an anti-Israel, like, protester, let's say. But you're not actually having any sort of, like, coming to a consensus. Properly advocating means looking the other person in the eye, and even though you fundamentally disagree with them, you can understand the humanity in the person you're looking at, make them feel acknowledged for what they're saying. Empathy is more than just a good thing to have in the conversation. It is the thing that steers and guides, like, a conversation where you're trying to just voice the pro-Israel side. And so just looking that person in the eye and say, like, yes, I understand, you know, the emotional side that you're coming from, because a lot of this is emotional. And I'm not saying that the pro-Israel side needs to go deeper into, like, the nuance and the history of every single thing. I'm not saying that because the other side has done that. They don't. They have the talking points. But as soon as you have a really good sense of the actual knowledge behind everything that's going on, knowing about, like, you know, everything that happened in the war of 1948 and before that and after that, for example, 67, not just knowing little points on a timeline, but really having a deep understanding of, like, this is in my brain and I know what's right and what's wrong. That mixed with, like, the empathy and the communication skills, I think that's how you have a real conversation and can voice, like, what you feel about Israel.
Right. I mean, I mean, also you've done some work with STEM with us, you know, with the Emerson Fellowship and things. And one of the things they talk about very often is the 5, the 90, and the 5. You know, 5% agree with you no matter what.
10, 80, 10.
Or 10, 80, yes. 10 at this point in time.
Yeah.
And so 10% agree with you no matter what. They're already on your side. If you're preaching to them, it's an echo chamber. 10% will disagree with you no matter what. They're always going to hate you. You preach to them, it's a brick wall. But the 80% in the middle, they don't know enough to actually form an opinion. They're uninformed or they just know nothing. So mm-hmm. that's who you really have to preach to. So when you have these debates, should it really be focused on trying to get to the people. You're not talking to the other person. You're trying to talk to everybody who's watching, whether it's online or whether you're talking or whether you're in a big crowd of like 50 people. Assumption is majority of people in that crowd don't know enough to actually formulate opinion. It's your job to get them to get an opinion.
And this is what's hard about online. Like, I'll just go into that for a minute. Like, online is an echo chamber. Like, I'm sorry, like, it's really hard to make online content. And, like, you know, future episodes, we're going to be interviewing, like, online content creators and influencers and stuff. It's really hard to do that and not have it be an echo chamber. You're mm-hmm. either going to have people being like, let's say you do have the other side see it, then they'll be like, in the comments. Social media is a place to just be a terrible person, and it's fine. So that's really hard. And then, echo chamberness is not good for a community. It's not good at all. It contributes to such isolation and a feeling of isolation specifically for the pro-Israel community. And then we isolate ourselves basically to some extent. Then we complain about being isolated. And so, yeah, relationships and allyship just outside of that is really important. And that's where that 90 or 80 or whatever number it is, that people that don't swing one way or the other necessarily, that's where they come in. It's just like, you know, I was saying this a few days ago on my little like Hasbara trip, right? Like, how many people in the world, it's weird to think about, have never met a Jew in their lives?
It's a good amount.
I like didn't even realize this until really recently when someone else told it to me, but like, no, yeah. And then I've spoken to a lot of allies. Allies. With like, you know, Stand With Us, like, CJ Pack, I'm a fellow with them now. It's Canadian Jewish Political Affairs Committee. I hope I got that right.
Close enough.
Yeah. But like they're, especially with CJ Pack, it's all about allyship. And like, I've spoken to like allies within that context and I'm like, where does your allyship come from? And I got a lot of different answers, but a really common answer was like, oh, yeah, my best friend growing up was Jewish. Oh yeah, I lived in a Jewish area. Just things where you can just see someone's like proud identity and see someone just being Jewish and like, you know, not having that be like a controversial thing or whatever, then I think that makes such a difference because all of a sudden you know someone that it's just inherent that they have a connection to Israel because obviously they would.
Do you think a lot of that allyship comes from personalization? So it's not just like a lot of allyship we see comes from like evangelicals of the shared religion of Judeo-Christian values. That's why a lot of Christians support Israel. Majority of Christians actually support Israel generally, but also comes from that personalization. Like you talk about, my best friend was Jewish. My teacher was Jewish. My cousin was Jewish.
A lot of it is that. Listen, like it depends sort of like how much a person will intellectualize the whole thing with like anti-Semitism and the conflict and things. Because also a lot of allies will say, like, well, Israel, I just support Israel because it aligns with my values. It, like, for example, so CJ Pack, the conference that I went to, it's half left wing, half right wing, basically, like half liberal, half conservative. And I was specifically asking the liberal allies that were there. I'm like, okay, like, you know, there's obviously a shift to the right now. Like, you know, multi-partisanship is important. But like, specifically, like, what is it about, like, you are a liberal and a Zionist, like, where do you see those two connect? And they go, well, of course it does. Like, my liberal values are the values of Israel, that freedom, that democracy. And, like, you just realize, like, Israel really is a symbol of the Western world in a very positive way. And so, you know, but it always does come down to still, like, I think that you're less likely to have someone intellectualize it that way if they've still never met a Jew before, never met someone with skin in the game. Like, that's just so important. And I mean, it probably goes the same for the other side. At the end of the day, we're emotional beings and we're not necessarily rational and intellectualizing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm like looking at this as if I'm asking you the next question. Yes.
I mean, just generally, it's very important to have like that personalization also, because personalization at the end of the day really can make or break up like alignments or friendships or allyships. Because you see in the UN, for example, again, we could talk about the UN all day if it's actually good for it, it's bad for Israel, but that's, we talk about that all day. But a lot of the diplomacy and stuff we see in the UN, for example, is personalization. Because they like the ambassador of that country, they'll go and try and work with that country more because they actually like that person.
Would you think so?
Yeah. I've read this before.
Is it actually?
Yeah. It's very much so. Like, there's a very personalization in politics in general.
Yeah.
So do you think, like, we should really be trying to do more of that with our advocacy?
I think so. Like, if you have some sort of little, like, talking head, like, open, like, going back to the online sphere, right? Like, open up their little camera and be like, this is why Israel needs to exist, because the Jews eat it up because it's the thing, or the pro-Israel Jews, whatever, the community eats it up because it's the thing that we, like, agree with. Like, you see some, what you see, like, some big influencer, I, like, don't want to name names, not the point, but some big influencer open their camera and say all these things. Like, this is the definition of echo chamber. And that's not super detrimental, but it's not actually doing a lot. It's just making us feel better about ourselves. And so you need the personalization aspect, because like Hasbara, it works really differently, and it's like manifests very differently than what the other side is doing. And you can blame it on the numbers game, but that's not the only thing.
Because we are outnumbered. Like, objectively, we are outnumbered in this world. Yeah. That's why it's so important to try and get every single person we can.
Hey, today's the last day of Chanukah. Were we outnumbered there?
Yeah, we were. And we still won.
Yeah. At the end of the day, if we know that there's moral clarity on our side, that there is true, progressive, inspiring, liberal, not in a political way, but in a societal way, liberal values that are attached to, you know, like what we're advocating for. And we know, you know, as Jews, like that means a strong identity. But overall, we know that what we're advocating for is right, then it's just the communication aspect from there. The communication, and then for us, knowing our history and knowing what we're talking about, so that when we get to conversations, we not only are armed with the history, but will contribute back to having the confidence to strengthen that identity, because we know exactly we're not just saying some sort of script, and we're having actual real, like, more productive conversations with people that are willing to listen. If someone's like, ah, the Jews, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, the Jews.
Yeah, like that's not what I'm referring to. I'm talking about the people that are in the 80 or
the middle ground, the gray.
That's I think advocacy, but like really, really personalization is something so like it's fundamental. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you think back to a person you know. We are like emotional creatures, we visualize creatures. So yeah, definitely
100%. I can't wait to see where this podcast goes.
I know, there were so many things we actually like did not talk about. Like, I didn't even like mention, like, oh, in the summer I did this and that, blah, blah. We
could easily have a whole season that's just the two of us going literally back and forth about all these various topics.
I'll say this quick, because like I hope this was communicated at the beginning, but like I don't like the I statements, right? Like, oh, like, well, I'm this, like, I did this, like, da 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 da. When it comes to like Israel activism or whatever, like it's the merit of the thing you did that's important. And that's maybe also just a general criticism of our community, is like there's been a lot of that since the 7th with like mission trips and things like that. And like, they're so important. Number one, they bring funds. Mm-hmm. So important. They bring people. They allow the victims to share their stories. And those things are just so imperative and like needed, truly. But in terms of just the general attitudes of it, right? Like, we should definitely try to steer clear of the I statements, because it doesn't matter that you did it. It matters that it was done.
It's become very I, not about the person you went for, not about what you went for, but about the fact that you did it.
And that all goes back to like the whole long little conversation we've had about advocacy and communication and what that all means. It's not about you. It's about the thing. It's 100%. About the thing and making sure that we communicate it right. Doesn't matter who the mouthpiece is. It's good that we have these public figures and influencers and stuff, but it's because they are a voice and a mouthpiece, not
Right. It's not about them.
I don't like the praised culture of like, wow, like you said something I agree with. Like, yeah, you're an inspiration. Yes, they are an inspiration.
Oh, could the gun drops. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and really, like, public figures in the pro-Israel online sphere, they are an inspiration. Like, again, I'm like, I want to make that clear. Mm-hmm. It is important to have those people, and not everyone can do it. And it's important when people do. But I think it's also just important to have the attitudes of like, at the end of the day, the merit of the actual thing being discussed or being done. That is what we want as a community to be cheering on.
100%.
I think that's an important note to end on.
Very much so. Thank you for listening to DeInfluence, a show that sets the record straight and explores the world of influencers, content creators, and more. Thank you so much, Amanda, for joining the show today, and we look forward to having you again on the show time and
again. I don't think this has been like explicitly said, but like we're going to be co-hosts for most of the episodes, mm-hmm. even though I live in Canada. But
we'll make it work.
Make that work. Yeah, it's fine. I just have to come back to Israel all the time. That's not hard.
Well, we look forward to having you back.
Yes.
My name is Joan Hoffman, and we will see you in the next one.
De-influenced. It's time to set the record straight with Jonna Hoffman and Amanda Yakubovitz.